You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What up, everybody? This is the Preachers and Sneakers podcast, the podcast that the least amount of people have ever asked for. Today, I had an amazing conversation with my Instagram friend up in New York, Whitney Bauck, otherwise known as @unwrinkling on Instagram. She's the associate editor at fashionista.com and has also written for the New York Times, Washington Post, Billboard, all the major news outlets. And she focuses on the intersection of faith and ethical fashion. So I wanted to get her perspective on ethical fashion, as well as consumer behavior within the church, and just hear a little more about her background. The fun fact is that she was actually the first person to interview me back in March that kind of started the fervor around the Preachers and Sneakers account. So I wanted to talk briefly about that. She's incredibly smart, super eloquent, and I think you'll get a lot out of our conversation. It was challenging to me, and I know it'll be challenging to you. Today's episode of the Preachers and Sneakers podcast is brought to you by the Christian Standard Bible. The Christian Standard Bible is a Bible translation created to be super easy to read without compromising the beauty of the text or the original meaning. Listen to this. Here's what Psalm 23 sounds like in the CSB. The Lord is my shepherd. I have what I need. He lets me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. Isn't that awesome? I really like the flow of the Christian Standard Bible, and I think you will too. They have tons of beautiful Bibles and great study editions like the She Reads Truth Bible, which my wife absolutely loves. You can check out the Christian Standard Bible at csbible.com. That's csbible.com. Okay, take a listen to my conversation with Whitney Bauck. I'm talking to my good Instagram friend, Whitney Bauck, the supreme leader of the ethical fashion news industry, self-proclaimed maybe, but she is the expert in my eyes and has caused me to rethink plenty of things that I do in my own life and the money that I spend. And I've just been sleeping or trying to sleep with the pure guilt that I feel for owning so many pairs of Nikes. But Whitney has written for all the major news outlets and continues to be the associate editor at Fashionista. And she is a big reason why I blew up in the first place and gave me that ridiculous whitewashed pseudonym, Tyler Jones. So, Whitney, thanks for talking with me on the Preachers and Sneakers podcast. This is, I mean, basically your fault. So, you know, people should be pissed at you more than they should be pissed at me.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. I have to admit, I had kind of forgotten that I made up this name for you. And then when I got your email back, I was like, what? Is this his real name? And then I was like, no, I literally made this name up. Like, I gave this man this name. So you're welcome, I guess, Tyler.
Yeah. And I thank you. It's, every time I say it, I feel terrible about it because it's just so uncultured and, I missed such an opportunity to either rebrand my whole name. I could have had something super like regal and, you know, macho, but instead I was like, no, I don't know. Just make up a name for me, whatever. Cause I had no idea how any of this was going to play out. Like, I assumed it was just going to be this one conversation and be like, haha, cool, I was on a news interview. But no. Now, I mean, all my emails, all my everything that didn't have to require a legal name, that name is gone there. So, whatever. Thank you. So for the people that don't know you, on Instagram and all the social medias, you go by the name Unwrinkling. Could you tell me about that and then kind of give me a brief overview of your writing career and how you earned your position at Fashionista and kind of what drew you to writing in general?
Yes, I'll try to do the version that doesn't take 3 hours. But
hey, we've got all the time in the world.
Yeah, I mean, basically in undergrad, I was studying studio art and I had long been interested in fashion, but I grew up overseas in Manila, Philippines, and I grew up around a lot of poverty, quite frankly, and there's a lot of uneven development. So Manila has a lot of really wealthy people, has a lot of really poor people, and there's just a really big gap. Hmm. And that's, you know, I drove through a squatter village, or what you would call here a slum, like to and from school every day for, you know, my whole life. So that's all to say, I had always loved fashion, but basically for a long time, I just like didn't think it was important work. Like, I had a really strong sense of real need in the world, and I didn't see fashion as being connected to that. And so I decided to pursue art, which somehow in my mind was a more practical way to meet people's needs. Big time.
In the art.
So when I was still in undergrad, I was studying art, but basically had a sort of a series of events happen that kind of forced me to rethink, or at least like notice the ways that I hadn't really thought through my position on fashion. And so I had an art history professor who was kind enough to let me write a paper for his class that was totally not fulfilling the assignment. But I basically just looked at everything that the Bible says about clothing and like adornment and nakedness and all things that were sort of connected to that. Oh. Because I was really curious about how those things were connected or not. And my faith was a really big part of what was shaping what I wanted to do with my life. And when I got to the end of that project, I came away from it feeling like, not only is this stuff like okay to be interested in if you care about, you know, what the Bible says, but it's actually really crucial, and it's all over the Bible. So if that's in any way a text that's of interest to you, ignoring fashion just doesn't make sense. So from that point, I decided to start a blog, and I'm not that old, so this was after blogs were allegedly already dead. But
best time to start.
I started a blog that I called Unwrinkling. And even though the blog has not been touched since I was basically a teenager, it was sort of where I started thinking about integrating my faith and my understanding of the fashion world. And that's sort of what the name came from. And that's also sort of been the guiding force behind my writing. So these days, as you mentioned, I'm an editor at Fashionista. I still sometimes freelance for places like the Washington Post and the New York Times. And it's not always explicitly about faith or about religion anymore, but that's sort of where I got my start. Right. And once you start thinking about like how religion affects how you would think about fashion, it's a lot about thinking about ethics, right? It's like what's right and what's wrong. And once you start thinking about that, man, there is so much to go into. Yeah. And that increasingly felt to me like this is really where the meat of the conversation is. And you don't need to like have the same faith background as me at all to agree that like someone shouldn't die to make a t-shirt.
Right.
Like, that's insane. And so that's really become my focus over the past 6 or so years. I would say my experience of growing up in the Philippines was absolutely positive. I think it was a real gift. I grew up in an international community. It was full of people from all over the world. I grew up getting to see, just like growing up in the developing world, you're seeing things really differently. I think there's a tendency here to be like, oh, in the West, people are rich, and in the global South, they're not. And it's just not that simple. I have friends in the Philippines who are way wealthier than I ever even aspired to be. And I also have friends there who don't have nearly as much as I grew up having. And in some ways, it's like any place. But I just think it's harder to get away from some of the problems that I think we're really good at insulating ourselves from in the
yeah,
US.
Yeah, I bet it gave you such a larger understanding, or at least an appreciation for other things in the world than just growing up in Kansas in the suburbs. I mean, just like having a consideration of other types of people and how like huge populations of people are living completely different than, you know, a lot of us are living in the West. I think that's just such an invaluable experience you probably had. Do you speak multiple languages fluently currently?
My Tagalog is really pathetic. I feel like when I'm there, I can like get around the city. But if you're white and you speak Tagalog to someone, they'll answer you in English because their English is probably better than your Tagalog. So
oh, yeah.
I have a little bit of an inferiority complex about that, but it's fine.
That word's hard to say. Tagalog?
Tagalog with a G.
Tagalog?
Sure.
Sound like, sorry, I'm just not trying to butcher that. I was just trying to relate to you, but that is a hard word to say. Did you get involved in the Chicago art scene while you were there? I mean, was that a part of that?
I was in Chicago a lot. I mean, I figured out pretty early. I figured out basically my sophomore year of college that I wanted to be focusing on fashion. So that sort of, I sort of made everything that I was doing about that from that point on. But it definitely was like in Chicago a lot for different arts events and happenings.
I see. Okay. All right. So fast forward, you're relatively young. Did you see pretty immediate success with your writing? Like, what does that transition look like from deciding, oh, I'm going to shift to writing about fashion, and now I'm writing, contributing to the New York Times and getting hired as an actual writer? What did that process look like?
Well, when I first started, I truly didn't know what I was doing. I didn't read other blogs and I honestly didn't really read the news. So I don't know what I thought I was doing. Like, I think about my first pitches to editors and it's truly horrendous. It's like very embarrassing. But I carved out a niche for myself pretty quickly. And if talking about like fashion and theology together sounds weird to people, like, I mean, maybe on this podcast it doesn't because that's the whole thing, right? But yeah. That was not a conversation people were having in 2013. And right. So it was this kind of like strange thing. I pitched a lot and I like take rejection in stride pretty well, I guess. So mm-hmm. I don't know how you measure success. I don't know if it's just that I was really stubborn.
Yeah.
And I didn't take no for an answer very often. But I started freelancing while I was still in undergrad. And then by the time I left undergrad, I did a bunch of different internships at various places before eventually landing at Fashionista. So I don't know how we measure success, but right. I felt pretty strongly about what I felt I was supposed to be doing. And so I ran after that pretty hard.
That's awesome that, I mean, thinking about it now, like the blog specifically focusing on the intersection of faith and fashion, you're right. Not many people were talking or even thinking about that kind of thing. And now I think more people are, but it's still, there's still plenty to dissect and talk about and build awareness for, I think. I mean, just from my own personal experience, like in 2013, I guarantee you, I didn't care where anything came from. I was more worried about, I was in the military still. So like I was worried about many other things, but definitely did not care where my clothes came from. But now, mm-hmm. since you and I have met, I mean, that is something that like I've been so doing the merch deal. It's like I've been beating these merch companies over the head about like where did the blanks get made? What are the conditions of the factories that these blanks were made? And I never would have asked that like a year ago. So I think I'm growing a tad, but I just wanted to give you props to say like what you're doing is super meaningful, even though you know this, super meaningful and at least has changed the perspective of one person. And I'm pretty hard-headed sometimes. So I appreciate what you do. And I think you write really well. And also, you're not just writing doom and gloom, like ethical fashion articles. Like I read one of your articles about, what they were wearing at the Grammys and talking about Lizzo's tiny little purse to fit the amount of Fs that she gives or something. I was cackling at that because I don't think you wrote that part, but you quoted it. And, so you have a very diverse way of writing. Let's see. So you're now at Fashionista and in 2019, how do you think ethical fashion and faith intertwine, and why I wanted to talk to you is hopefully that we could communicate why Christians and non-Christians alike should care about ethical fashion more than they ever have before. But, you know, you're the big crux of your mission in life is to talk about fashion and faith. So can you just kind of talk briefly about what the state of that is currently, and maybe what's being done well and what still needs to be improved on? I know it's a huge question, but just whatever you want to say on that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, first of all, thank you for all the kind words. I have to admit, I'm pretty surprised that we're having this conversation right now, because when I first started bugging you about where your merch was going to be made, I kind of thought that you were just going to stop communicating with me, because I was such a pain in the ass about
it. Well, you know, I did feel guilt and like, ah, shit, she's just, let me make this merch, please. Like, it's so much cheaper, but that's not the right way to view it. And so I did some thinking on that and realized the problem was within me and not within you bugging me. So I haven't done it perfectly, but we spent a lot more money on this last merch drop on things that were made in the United States. So, you know, we're heading in the right direction. But yeah, back to you. I don't want to talk about me the whole time.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you responding to that. Well, I think the first time I asked when you had actually made merch, it was like, hey, where did you have your blanks made? And you were like, I don't want to tell you. So the fact that we went from that to you inviting me on the podcast is speaks well of you, honestly. I think that you're willing to like take that. I guess to just give a little bit of background to people who might be newer to this conversation. And I know that you had Liz Bohannon from Seiko on the podcast earlier, and she's someone that I've learned a ton from.
Well, she said the same about you. I don't know if you listened to it, but she was great.
I haven't listened to the whole thing yet. That's sweet.
She basically said you were the person to talk to about ethical fashion. And I said, I agree.
Oh, so she forced you back into
it. Well, yeah. It's like, all right. Oh, you're bringing up Whitney again. Great. I guess I will have to go talk to her again.
Oh, goodness. I guess just as an intro to people who are new to this conversation, I think it's been really cool to see what you've done through Preachers and Sneakers in terms of helping people think about sort of this disparity sometimes in how we talk about faith and about the values of this person, Jesus, and then, you know, sort of what we're spending on our own clothing. But I think the deeper you go into looking at fashion, the more you understand that like 90% of fashion's actual impact in the world is not actually like the end product that sits on someone's shelf or that they're wearing that day. 90% of the impact is coming from the supply chain, which like sounds really unsexy to people, but it's basically just like how was the thing made before it got to you? So yeah, maybe it was expensive or it was cheap, or maybe it had a picture on it that was provocative or not. But before that point, there's so many decisions that go into making that garment that are really ethically loaded. So that can be everything from like how the farming was done of the cotton to then how it was dyed. Were those dyes toxic or were they clean? Then when it was milled and then cut and sewn, was it cut and sewn in a factory where laborers were treated well and they were paid adequately and they were given breaks? Or was it the kind of place that was pretty unsafe and could, you know, end up causing a fire like this one that we just saw in New Delhi earlier this week that just killed a bunch of people again? Like, this stuff is still happening. It's not from the past. Like, we're still having factory fires in India or in Bangladesh or in Cambodia that are ending lives. And to me, that's a really, really, really important ethical question. And I don't think you have to be a person of faith at all to agree on that. Like, that just seems really straightforward. So I think once I started looking at all of that and realizing sort of like who makes our clothes and that it's usually people that are often pretty marginalized in the societies that they're in, or that they're just in sort of countries that don't have the same access to resources, and that those are the people that Jesus was always talking about, right? Like, he was always, always pushing to the margins of society. Like, that's who he was most interested in. So if you say you're interested in him, to me, it's like, you've got to care who made your clothing. And then when you look at, I mean, if you have any interest in like the Judeo-Christian narrative of the God of the Bible, that God is always saying that God reveals God's self through creation. And that means that how we treat the planet in the process of making our clothing is also really important. So I think once you understand those things, it's really hard to, to unsee them, right? Like I can't, like I'm sitting looking at my closet right now and I'm like, I can't look at anything in my closet without thinking about how I got it and what I know about how it was made, which at this point for me is a lot, but I know at one point that wasn't true. So I think a big part of my goal is just to help people see sort of this whole story that comes behind their clothing before it ever gets to them, and to help hold governments and companies accountable who have the power to change how those places are run.
At the scale, like, you know, looking at your closet is such a micro scale, but you multiply that out by every person in the world that has clothes, it gets to be a massive set of numbers or a massive set of conditions that are happening every day. Man, especially when you equate it to like, hey, if you love Jesus, you should probably care about the people that are making the stuff that you're buying. The thing where my mind goes, though, maybe the sinful place my mind goes is like, how much do I have to care? Or like, how far back in the supply chain do I need to care? Because at a certain point, I won't get anything done if I'm researching every product or good that I've bought ever. And not to minimize what you're saying, I just, in my mind, that's where it goes. It's like, well, okay, like it, all right, if I care about Jesus, I should care about the people that are creating my t-shirts. But what about this microphone I'm using? Or what about the paint on my walls? Or what about these scissors that are in my desk? Like, do you ever think about that? Or do people ever bring that up to you about like, all right, like where does it stop?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess this is what I would say is one, not everyone needs to be an expert on everything, right? Like I am an expert on clothing and I really can talk the ins and outs of all of these like nitty gritty details about the fashion supply chain. But even though I understand that like our food supply chains have a really huge impact as well, especially on things like the climate crisis, which I care deeply about, I'm not an expert on food. And honestly, I'm not nearly as responsible about my food choices as I am about my clothing because I just know more about clothing. That said, I do think it's fair to say that we should all be thinking more about where we get things. And when it comes to clothing, I think one of the reasons it's easy for me to pick on is that it's not like food in that you don't need it in the same way. Like you need new food every day. You absolutely cannot do without it. Most people listening to this podcast do not need any new clothing. And they honestly probably won't within the next 5 years. Like maybe you'll need a new pair of socks or underwear.
Man, my weight has been fluctuating, Whitney. Every 6 months I got a new waistline working.
Maybe you buy one pair of jeans that fits you at every size.
Buy some elastic. I'll look into where my elastic comes from because that's what I need to be investing in. Sweet mercy. Sorry.
There you go.
I didn't mean to derail you, but carry on. You were making a good point.
No, you're good. And I think it's fair to be like, yeah, there are times that really call for new clothes. But even then, I would say you can always go secondhand. It's not like some other consumer goods, in that you really can almost always either get it secondhand, just not buy it at all. Mm-hmm. Or if you're buying new, do a little bit of research and find the right thing. So I don't know. I think clothing can be an easier way in for people. And if you start trying to track literally every object in your house and life, it will get overwhelming. But I think fashion can be a good place for people to start because we all use it, but we could probably all change how we consume it without it being harmful to us.
Yeah. And everybody should, like, it's a pretty easy, there's a set of pretty easy baby steps you can make. Like maybe don't go ham at Target buying a bunch of new clothes, despite them being cheap. Like there's other options for getting relatively affordable clothes, even if it's just buying clothes secondhand, like just doing a step more than maybe you've done in the past. Cause that, yes. I mean, like even for me, I feel a little more convicted about like, walking through the mall and like, I mean, I can't fit into anything at H&M, but I've looked at H&M before. And it's like, just knowing that they're most likely using the cheapest possible labor materials that just between March and now, I at least feel more weight about that kind of thing. Now, granted, like, I don't know anything close to what you know about clothing, but I think we all have room to grow, and it's not a, it doesn't have to be a like sackcloth and ashes type thing overnight. And yeah. Like the deeper thing I think is, and what I've been kind of trying to work on more long form is like how much, if at least for people that say they believe in Jesus, like how much of his life and lifestyle are we to emulate? Because depending on how you answer that question will probably dictate your shopping habits or your fashion habits, like to go out and try to fill a void with retail therapy is probably missing the point in being right. a follower of Jesus. What do you think?
Right. And it seems like, I mean, maybe this is a cop out, but isn't the ideal answer like as much as possible, right? Like
I don't want to say that because then I'm going to have to actually live it. Yeah. I'm not prepared to put that right, like, on the record.
Like none of us are doing it well, but I just wonder what it looks like when people really take Jesus seriously. I mean, yeah. I remember I DM'd you about this earlier this year, but I guess there's sort of two main threads that I think come out of this. The one is talking about the ways that we're consuming and like consuming more ethically or being more careful about our supply chains, like asking who's making our clothing, asking how that's impacting the planet and the ecosystems that those materials are drawn out of. And that's sort of one side. And I can go into so much depth on mm-hmm. that. But the other side of it that I think that a lot of the work you're doing has brought up for people is about sort of wealth and possessions and consumption overall. Right. Yeah. And that's honestly, that's been a question that's, I don't know, I'm evolving in a lot, how I think about a lot of that this year too. I mean, I think the conversations we were having earlier in the year when I did that first interview with you, that was part of it. But then it's also been really, really interesting. I met someone, well, let me rewind. Okay. Have you heard of the book Winners Take All by Anand Giridharadas?
I only have heard of it because I listened to a podcast interview you did earlier and you said that was like one of your favorite books. I was trying to do my research, which you did another fashion type podcast and you brought up that book, but that's the only place I've heard of it.
Yeah. Okay. So this book is by a reporter and he's not a person of faith. It's not talking about faith or fashion explicitly at all, but he talks a lot about basically the ways that we try to accomplish good and the ways that we do that through business, which in the past sort of like businesses trying to do good in the world has been something I've highlighted and advocated for a lot in my writing. And this book was, the book's about a lot of other things too, but those were some of the biggest things for me. And this book was really big in sort of shifting how I thought about that and being like, hey, is business actually the best way to accomplish these things that we say we're trying to accomplish? Because if so, why is inequality in terms of like income just growing? So I got really kind of obsessed with this book for a lot of the first half of this year. And through the fact that I was talking about it incessantly, literally everywhere I went, I made friends with someone through Praxis, which is a sort of entrepreneurship centric group that does a lot around like faith and work. And I'm not an entrepreneur, but
yeah, I've heard of them before.
Yeah.
I don't know where
they're doing. Well, Liz Bohannon is another person who's connected to the Praxis network. So I don't know if that's something that she talks about, but they're a great group that's doing a lot of really great work. But I was at a gathering of theirs and met someone who was also sort of in that network and started talking about this book. And the long story short is that we ended up having this really long conversation about like how you actually accomplish good. This person worked in philanthropy at the time, read this book, quit his job because he became convinced that the way that he was involved in philanthropy was actually like not helping.
Jeez.
And since then has, I mean, literally like given away all his money, given away his like laptop and his phone. He's currently living in LA, like on the streets with a bunch of other people who live outside. And just trying to be like, hey, this seems like this is what Jesus was saying. So like, why don't we just do this?
Jeez.
Okay. If you want to talk about someone who's like taking Jesus really seriously at Jesus' word. It's like, this friend of mine is doing that. And there's a lot of ways in which I'm like, man, I don't know how to follow you, because I feel like I don't know that everyone is called to a career. I don't actually think everyone is, but I actually do have a really strong sense of calling about my work. And so I, like, until I feel like I'm sort of released from that, like, I'm going to keep prioritizing these things. Yeah. And I don't know necessarily how to do that while, like, giving away my laptop.
Right, right, right.
But, but I think so many of us are so willing to be like, well, that's just too hard, or that's too crazy. Like, I could never do that. And to like see a friend as someone who I knew, I think it's easy too, when I'm saying this whole story, to be like, oh yeah, this is this person. But it's like, I met this person before they made any of these choices. Like, he had not made these choices. And then he made them just because he was like, how different would it look if I just took Jesus really seriously? And we did a whole study with a bunch of people on wealth and possessions and what that has looked like throughout Judeo-Christian scripture. And like, it's just been a process that I think, again, it comes back to the two things. It's like, one, how does this system exist as it is and how can we make it better? But then two, like, what are the ways that we don't even need to be participating in the system, that we're just letting the culture around us tell us we have to? And so we're not opting out when we actually could. Like, there really is another way. And I'm not saying everyone is going to do what my friend did. But I do think that his sort of attitude towards this has really challenged me, because something he said really early on in this process was something like, he was like, what if Christians were known not so much for their like sexual discipline as their financial discipline, because the Bible talks way more about money than it does about sex. But if you ask any of my friends in New York what they know about Christians, it's like, oh, didn't Justin Bieber and Hailey Bieber like not have sex before they got married? It's like, that's what they know. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
Like,
and it's just ridiculous. It is.
But this is what we've focused on, right? We've like fought these battles about these things that, it's not to say that they're not in scripture or that they're not, you know, there to be talked about, but the sort of weight that we've given them, where we can tell people what to do with their sex lives, but we're so unwilling to tell people what they should consider doing with their money, just seems really out of whack to me. Yeah. Because Jesus was crazy about that stuff. He was like, sell everything you own. And he would tell people things like that. And then if, you know, if someone is to do that in sort of the modern church today, we're like, oh, no. Well, you know, everyone has to do their own thing. Yeah. I just wonder if we need to be willing to like take the challenge a little bit more and ask, like, what would it look like to live really radically with regards to what we see as our possessions?
Yeah, that is such a good point, because like, even thinking of my own like Southern upbringing, we cared a ton about purity and, you know, not doing it before marriage, saving yourself for marriage. But I don't remember, I mean, we never hammered on debt and how we were spending our money in near the same, or how much money we were giving away in near the same type of tone and terms as we were talking about purity. I'd never considered it like that until you just said that, though. That's very interesting. But I guess the rebuttal is like, all right, well, the purity stuff, you're dealing with sin within your body that maybe, I'm just trying to process this, God, you know, God calling it your body a temple and then basically defiling it by being impure. I mean, then you start talking about grading sins on a scale, and both like being poor stewards of our money and being poor stewards of our body are both what separate us from God.
Yeah, and I guess I don't really want to get into a game of being like, this thing is worse than this thing. I guess it's just funny, though, when you say something like talking about your body as the temple, because it's like, what's the one time we see Jesus get like just so pissed that he gets almost violent? It's in the temple, right? With the money changers. Like, it comes back to money. So, again, I don't want to necessarily say like, you can't pay attention to this and this at the same time. Yes, you can. Like, you can pay attention to a lot of different things. I just think when we look at the American church, and I absolutely like put myself in this category of someone who really hasn't had that robust of a theology of money before this point.
Yeah.
We haven't made it a priority to understand or question or think about that. And we've been really careful about not wanting to step on people's toes.
Yeah.
Whereas we've been absolutely willing to regulate everything about people's sex lives. It just doesn't make any sense to me when I look at the proportions that Jesus talked about these things.
Yeah, that's a great word, because like having a, just like you, like, I think there is a, there's got, and I want to avoid trying to sound like some arrogant know-it-all that feels like he's more inspired than others. Like, I'm sure people have talked about this before, but it seems like there's got to be a shift coming that says we have been effing away all the talks about money and basically letting everyone kind of do their own thing in their own mind, and have been over-indexing on maybe the purity stuff. It seems like we're headed that way, because kind of like, if we can tie it back in, it's for whatever reason, people got fired up about the preachers and sneakers thing. Up to this point, no one had really kind of touched a nerve in that way regarding spending money and representing Christ. And it was more, it was like on the extreme level. And that seems indicative of a shift that's coming around, like talks about money in the church. Because I've sat through plenty of sermons talking about money and how we're to be good stewards of money, but we've never really had like super honest conversations in the same way that we've had honest conversations like, hey bro, do you have anything to confess? Like, have you been messing around with so and so? Like, I've never had that conversation with, you know, accountability partners. Like, hey bro, like, did you spend $1,000 on your credit card? That kind of thing. Or like, oh, have you really not been giving to anyone for the past 10 years? That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think this is a good time to take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about preachers and sneakers. Hey, yo, what up? This episode of the Preachers and Sneakers podcast is brought to you by posterburner.com. You know all those photos on your iPhone and your computer that you took once and never looked at again? Why not take some of the best ones and turn those into beautiful canvases for your home or office? Posterburner.com uses advanced printing science that I don't understand, like image super resolution, to prepare your image for printing. And that makes a huge difference in the final print quality. It won't look amateur and it won't look blurry like if you printed it at your house. They have old-fashioned conversational customer service, talking to a real person. Imagine that. That will help you along or answer any of your questions. Your image will never print better than it will at posterburner.com, and I can guarantee it. They sent me a poster of some of the graphics I use on Instagram, and it looks amazing. Go to posterburner.com/preachers today, and you'll get an additional 10% off your order. That discount applies to every type of print they offer. Again, it's posterburner.com/preachers. And we're back with Whitney Bauck. We're talking about ethical fashion. We're talking about finance conversations within church and why we should care about our spending, where we get our things, and the kind of tone and terms that we talk about money compared to maybe other issues like purity. So we've talked a lot about ethical fashion and kind of writing about it and kind of the concept of it. Somewhat of a self-serving question. Can you talk me through the process of you kind of discovering the Preachers and Sneakers account and then reaching out to me? Because you were my first interview. My first like kind of affirmation that what I was doing was newsworthy. So could you kind of talk to me about that whole process? Could just even for my own entertainment, like it would be fun to hear about how you found the account and what that looked like.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think the first person I saw tweet about it or something was, maybe it was Caitlin Beattie, who's a former Christianity Today person who's now a book publisher.
Okay, cool.
And I've been writing about this for a long time, right? So it's like I've written about when all of the all the cool big churches started doing church merch. I wrote about that when
all of these
pastors were starting to be in the spotlight because they were hanging out with Bieber and whoever. I wrote about that and wrote about sort of the role that fashion plays in how these guys see themselves and sort of how they move in their own congregation. So none of this was really new to me, but it was just like, oh my gosh, there's this thing that's obviously like a sort of new take on it. And so that's why I reached out. It's been the kind of thing that I think this is the other thing. There's a sort of divide, I think, often in how religious folks are portrayed in art and media. And I think on the one hand, if something's made by religious folks, things can be flattened because there's a tendency to be like, oh, we're just going to portray everything as just fine and everyone is so great. Or things can be flattening in the other direction where if religious folks are portrayed by non-religious folks who aren't very sympathetic, they can be flattened by being like, these people are so dumb or so corrupt or so whatever.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm always interested in ways in which we can talk about religious folks honestly. And I think that should happen whether or not, whatever your background is, however you're talking about people should be honest and well-rounded. And so I think that was the other thing that was interesting to me is that it felt like you were bringing up sort of a really valid critique. But then especially once I started talking to you and realized like, oh, you're a person of faith yourself. And the reason you noticed all of this is because you were watching worship music videos.
Yeah, not my proudest moment either. YouTubing worship videos.
Hey, no hate, no hate. I think it just made it really interesting to me.
Yeah, I've since met the guy that of the video that I was watching.
And oh yeah, how'd that go?
Well, come to find out, he had borrowed the shoes, so that was a good piece of info to know.
Nice.
But he was actually cool about it, and kind of I got to meet him in person actually when he was touring with Hillsong. But I think my views on it have probably changed a little bit since we talked. I mean, you were interviewing me within like 2 weeks of me creating the account and not understanding that people saw this as like a serious cultural discussion. And I, at the time, I really didn't have any intent of being a part of that. Like, I just liked making people laugh. I liked, you know, people thinking it was new and fresh and feeling like I'd created something that nobody else had thought of. All that was great. And then I was at the time you were interviewing me, it was like, oh shit, like people, this makes people feel some type of way, one way or the other. I need to kind of get a grip on how I feel about this, but I still like there's sides to both of like there. I've talked to several of these guys and I understand their perspective, but also I still hold true that it's like, you should consider what your clothing communicates, whether or not it's fair or not. Like if you're curating the picture on Instagram, you should understand that maybe not everyone is going to love it. Now, granted, people will blame me for even bringing light to it. I'm like, dude, I've done very little other than just put the price tag next to the thing that you already posted about.
Yeah.
What do you think about like taking your maybe fashionista hat off and more your believer hat on, not believer, believer hat on?
Helpful clarification.
Yeah. What do you think about, because the deeper thing, at least for me, is like, what are we to do with building wealth and notoriety and kind of access and privilege off of the name of Jesus, like off of purely being a good communicator, performer, artist around the name of Jesus? What do you think about all that?
Oh man. I feel like so much of my thought on that is still evolving, to be quite honest. Like I didn't personally come to a place financially, just to be really transparent myself, until like pretty recently, where I wasn't just sort of like scraping to get by. Like I live in New York. It's very expensive. The work that I do can look glamorous from the outside, but it's often not very well compensated. The way that you can make good money in it is by like working directly with brands in a way that I'm not personally willing to at this point in my life.
Yeah.
And so it's only been recently that I've been stable enough financially to really be like, oh, like now I have enough sort of margin that like I'm actually making decisions. I'm not just like surviving.
Yeah.
And
congrats.
So I think, well, thank you. But I think that what that's meant is that for a long time, my sort of ideology was like, I just don't spend on anything. I don't absolutely have to. Mm-hmm. And then that's how I, you know, make it work. And so I think these conversations that I've been having, like I mentioned with my friend Matt, who I met through Praxis, and a group of us who did a book study this summer on wealth and possessions, which is by Walter Brueggemann. He's an Old Testament scholar.
Yep.
It's really just been shifting how I think about so much of it. And I think before I would have been much more willing to say like, you know, I mean, I do think things are still up in some ways up to the individual person. I don't think that the right thing is going to be to swing so far the other direction that we suddenly are like have churches telling people how they need to be spending their money or not. Yeah. I think that could also get really gross. But right now it does seem like there's this sort of carte blanche around being like, yeah, you know, if your message is good and you're like, you love the Lord and you like, don't commit the cultural sins that in America we really prize. So like, I would say that's things around sexuality and whatever, then you're fine. And we're not going to question it. And I just don't think that makes sense. Do I know what people should be doing who, you know, run these mega churches? No, I truly don't. Like, I don't know what I would do if I was put in that position.
Yeah.
I think for some of them, there's probably some people out there that are genuinely like schemers and grifters and they're totally just milking the cow.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there are other people who probably like are really earnest and they started out in a thing and then they had, you know, they were had sort of charisma and great stage presence. And so they kept getting bigger and bigger platforms put in front of them. And honestly, I think some of them probably just haven't really thought about it.
Right. Like,
I think some of them sort of rode this wave and then got to the top, and what they saw from other people and sort of their status level, whether they were people of faith or not, was this sort of almost influencer thing. And so they did it too, because they hadn't, you know, they just hadn't dug into the like the real richness that there is in scripture around like what it looks like to interact with money well.
Yeah. And there's so many, like putting myself in their shoes, like if you're they probably didn't see anything wrong with it. And there might still not be anything wrong with, you know, having designer clothes that are worth a ton and, you know, wearing name brand stuff on stage outside of the ethics of the actual products. That just makes me think, like, is it even worth discussing if there is no, if there's no endpoint, like, you know, trying to annualize it out, like, is the counter to this just ultimately ending up living a monk lifestyle? Because I would never want to do that, nor would I want to ask somebody that's being a pastor a super hard job to live like that either. I just don't know. I don't know where it ends, or I don't know where it stops, or, and, but then you say, like, well, you know, it's case by case and kind of gray. And then it's like, all right, well, then, if it's case by case and it all depends on the person, is it worth continuing to talk about or is it worth continuing to bring up?
But isn't that so much of how Jesus did everything in his ministry? He was so rarely being like, here's the list of 10 rules that are black and white. And if you do this, you're fine. And if you're not, you're screwed. Like he was always having these really personal interactions with people that were so individual to them. And what he said to one person might sound almost like the opposite of what he said to someone else. But I think it's because he understood that like, there's not often these things that you can, there are some things like, yeah, probably don't murder someone ever. Like that seems like a good move, but there are other things that are not always that clear and that are going to be different based on different things. And there are going to be things that maybe I couldn't handle very well that you could handle. And so when it shows up in my life, it's like, man, Whitney, you got to get that out of there. Whereas you could handle it in stride. Like, I think there's a huge range. I don't think it means we stop talking about it. I think it just means like, a lot of this stuff has to be worked out in community, in the context of a group of people who are going to like hold you accountable and also come alongside you as you try to evolve. I'm curious, are you familiar with Rich Mullins?
Yes. Didn't he pass away?
He did. He was a like Christian contemporary artist in the 90s. He was big, dude. He was like, he wrote Awesome God. Like he's written a million things you've heard.
Yes, absolutely. Okay.
So I got obsessed with him also earlier this year because I started just like reading about how he handled his finances. Mm-hmm. So just to like give a little back like context, this guy was like one of the top people in Christian music when Christian music was like a monolith. Like it was huge.
Yep. CD sales and all that kind of.
Yeah. Like you could make real money. And he like did the whole Nashville thing, which is where all those people were for a while. And then he was like, this is gross. I'm not into this. So he moved to Kansas, I think, and did a seminary there. And he was still making all this money from doing his tours and his sales and whatever. But rather than keep it or even rather than like tithing it, he had all of his money sent to his elder board at his little church in Wichita, Kansas. So that he wasn't even the one that was making the decisions. He was like, I don't even want to be the one who gets to call the shots on how to give this. So they all decided where to give it away. They gave him whatever was the, like, whatever the average American salary was that year. That's what they would give him to live on. Huge. And then the rest of it they gave away. So that's how he lived for a while. And then he was like, nah, I'm done with that. And he moved to, I think it was the Navajo reservation. And he had all of his money just pooled among everyone at the Navajo reservation. And then at some point he realized that was just making them one of the richest reservations in the U.S. And so then he started giving it just like amongst reservations in the U.S. Jeez. Like, this guy was, I don't even know of an equivalent today. I don't know if we have someone that's sort of the equivalent of like this sort of height of Christian culture, but he was so aware of the way that money corrupts and also that it doesn't, it's not like, it's not going to make his life better. Hmm. You know what I mean? Like saying like, oh, I wouldn't want to ask anyone to like live like a monk or to give up these things. I get that. But I think we also have a misunderstanding of what wealth and possessions actually do in our life. Like if you understand that they're not really where your joy is going to come from or where fulfillment is going to come from, it's, there's actually a lot of really beautiful things you can be invited into when you're given freedom from those things. And I think sometimes we think like, oh no, my freedom is being able to choose to have those things. But I think sometimes we've forgotten the freedom that comes from like saying no to those and what else that like allows into your life.
Ooh, that is a lie I believe all the time though, that money is going to make things like, no, money doesn't fulfill, but let me just learn that for myself. I don't want to learn that from you person that already has money. But yeah. No, I'm agreeing with you like that in the pot meet kettle. Like I don't know how to do that right now. Like that is one of my biggest struggles about saying like, dude, if I could just get to this number, we could be crushing it. And, you know, we could do so much good for the world. But that's like almost like a prison where you're just like, this dictates everything that I do. But if I could find a way to break free from feeling like I need all that stuff, like you said, like there's, you would almost be able to tap into something that you'd never had access to, like the freedom and the peace that comes from not having to have any of that stuff. Well, what do you splurge on anything? Like, is there anything that you do like that you're working towards? Like, is it a trip or is it a, like, what's entertainment for you?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like I'm like living in a, like, listen, I have access to so many privileges. There's so many ways in which I'm like, I don't know. I feel like I am deeply privileged from a like money and possessions perspective. And I guess it just depends on what you're comparing things to.
Yeah.
And there's a million ways that I'm not using my money well at the moment. Like there are so many things that I'm like, yeah, I could be doing better in this. And this is something I want to grow in. But yeah, I feel like most of my money goes to like transportation and travel existing. And food.
Yeah.
Those are the...
That's great.
And I'm honestly, like, because of people like my friend Matt, who's now living in the streets in LA, like, I'm thinking a lot more about giving. And, like, since meeting him, I'm giving regularly to a lot of places that I wasn't before. And looking at what it would take to increase that over time. And I don't know. I do imagine, like, in the long run, what does it look like to continue building into the kinds of communities in places like New York that are really stable and that people can really find really tight-knit interdependent communities, which is hard here because people get priced out of their neighborhood so often. And quite frankly, I expect that to happen to me. So, you know, those are things that I think, you know, long-term, what does it mean to do some, like, think about that with regards to money? I don't in any way mean to hold myself up as like I'm doing this well or right. I don't think I am. I think I'm really at the beginning of my journey of like having a better perspective on all of this. But I've been grateful for the people who have challenged me and like really helped me to think differently about it. Because I do think it, like you're saying, it's kind of time. Like we've been doing it wrong in the American church for a really long time. Like it's kind of time for something to shift.
Yeah, absolutely. More on the practical, because I agree with you, like wholeheartedly, and I don't know why it has fallen in both of our laps like this. Well, it fell in my lap. You worked for it. But there does seem to be a purpose for why, like there does seem to be a purpose for why Kanye West is so publicly becoming a Christian and going to Joel Osteen's church, like, and why that fits so well into the whole consumerism and celebrity preachers and sneakers conversation. I don't know what's going to happen, but it feels like it is pretty timely at this point. Mm-hmm. More practically, I just want to ask you one more thing about ethical fashion. What brands do you think are doing, like what brands are you a fan of and how they're operating? Because like this, you know, as I produce more and more product myself, it would be helpful to know what brands are serving as a good example of this. And then which brands are maybe talking the talk, but not performing what they're saying they're going to do.
Oh man. Well, my disclaimer is always, always, always do secondhand first, or just deal with what's in your already in your closet. We cannot buy our way out of an ecological crisis, which is what we're facing right now. So I will list brands, but only with the very strong disclaimer that like, you shouldn't be like, oh, well now I can just buy these brands and not feel guilty about it. Like we have to curb our consumption overall. So that being said, I mean, I feel like Patagonia and Eileen Fisher are two brands that pretty much every brand that I talk to, when they're thinking about who they admire and look up to, those are two of the brands that come up for people. They're both really responsible or trying to be really responsible around human rights in terms of their labor and their factories and all of that. And they're also trying to be really responsible about how they're sourcing raw materials, and sort of the impact that that has both on the people who are part of that part of the supply chain, whether they're farmers or ranchers or whoever, and the planet itself in terms of plants and animals. Those are two that are great.
Patagonia, I don't know much about Eileen Fisher. I did have a classmate work there this summer in the MBA program, and she really enjoyed it. Patagonia does a really good job of repurposing all their stuff too. Like you can basically get it repaired or replaced.
Yeah.
And that's so becoming like it's kind of a thing now.
Yeah. That's becoming more true even for other, I mean, Eileen Fisher, one of the reasons they come up too is that they have set up a whole, they call it their tiny factory. And it's basically all built on taking back old Eileen Fisher clothes and upcycling them into new things, which is something that
upcycling, that's the term, upcycling.
Yes.
Yep.
Which is something that everyone said for a long time, you just can't do it scale, you can't do it scale, you can't do it profitably. And it's still a challenge to figure that out, but those are two brands that are trying to do it.
Awesome. I've seen you write about Nike specifically, about their kind of making a commitment to some green type initiatives. What do you think about what they're doing? Do you think that it's more of a PR thing right now, or have they made any strides as far as improving their supply chain? Because a lot of people will bring that up. It's like, yeah, your shoes were made in a sweatshop somewhere in Thailand or something. What do you think about, are we going to talk about Nike specifically?
Oh, Nike. they don't have the best track record. They don't have the best track record. Mm. So if you look at like the 90s, there were a ton of boycotts against Nike because all of this information came out about labor abuses in their factories. And they responded in a way that's made people actually point to that as like, this is an example of how consumer activism can work. But I feel like what it's shown to me, if anything, is that you really need people who like, this is going to sound whatever, something. You need people whose hearts are really in it. And it's about more than just responding. And quite frankly, I'm not super convinced that's what's happening there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had their new chief sustainability officer look me in the eye and tell me that they don't have any leverage over their supply chain at this point, basically saying like, we can't control, you know, what's happening there. And there was a report this summer about, some factories in Malaysia where a number of different brands were producing, and Nike was one of them. And there was some really yucky stuff happening in terms of labor rights violations there. And a lot of other brands actually responded in pretty great ways, but Nike kind of passed the buck and said it wasn't their fault and said, we didn't know, these weren't places that we were choosing to produce. These were subcontractors, which is true, right? Like they didn't technically authorize those places, but to me, I would say, like, if you really care about doing right, then you need to take control of your supply chain and you need to figure that stuff out so that doesn't happen. And I mean, this stuff has been pointed out about them before, literally in Malaysia, not even like in another part of the world. In Malaysia, a similar report like this came out in the Wall Street Journal, I want to say, I don't know, like 10 years ago. So to me, if this is happening to you over and over as a brand and you keep being like, well, we're working on it, or, you know, well, like, I get that they're a huge company, but I just
considering that they would talk about themselves as leaders in design and leaders in tech innovation, I would like to see a little bit more leadership in terms of how they're implementing practices that really protect human rights and that really protect the environment. And right now, I'm not convinced that that's happening.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. Like, you would think a multi-bazillion dollar company could throw some resources at potentially. I mean, granted, it's probably a super complex organization and a lot of, you know, cooks in the kitchen up there. But yeah, you would think that the playing dumb about factories in Malaysia would not be that great of a, like, to say you don't have any leverage over your supply chain is, I mean, out of context, that seems ridiculous.
Yeah. And I get that they're a huge ship, right? Like, they're the largest sportswear brand in the world. Like, that, there's a lot. I get that there's a lot that they're dealing with. But again, like, if you can figure out how to do all of these other crazy, amazing things in terms of your innovation, but you can't figure out how to make sure that there's no child labor in your supply chain, like, to me, you're not prioritizing the right thing. Like, get the one thing straight. Like, I'm more interested in you not having a kid make my shoes than I am in, like, you creating something that's 1% springier in the sole.
Right. Facts. Yeah. I guess I would love to hear, maybe I'll get one of them on the podcast one day to hear from their perspective. Cause I'm sure other people are beating down their door about the same things, but I wonder what's actually going on back there. All right. I've taken more time than I said I would, but are you working on anything currently that people can find on the internet, or you got any projects going on?
Oh, always.
Got anything to pub?
I mean, the easiest way to keep, I don't know when this will come out. The easiest way to keep up with what I'm doing is usually through social at this point, which, as you already mentioned, is just at Unwrinkling. So I'm always pushing out new stuff. Happy to get feedback on it and what people are interested in learning more about too.
Heck yeah. Awesome. Well, I'm so impressed with your writing, Whitney. I mean, you've basically changed my life for the, we'll see if it was for the better or not in the long term, but I appreciate you being willing to come talk and, you know, giving me my start in the public domain. You probably contributed to me getting my blue check mark. So that's the most important thing out there. So, Whitney Bach, thanks for taking the time again, and I hope you continue to crush it in the news world and continue to make a huge impact in ethical fashion. I know I've learned a ton and super challenged, and I'm going to go back to burying my head in the sand so I don't feel guilty about the thing. So thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
Big shouts out to my homie Zane Callister for producing this week's episode. Not only that, but he also provided the intro and ad music from his band Utah. You can check them out on Spotify as well as Instagram at Made by Utah. If you haven't by this point, shame on you, but please make sure that you subscribe and give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you want additional access, additional merch, additional content from Preachers and Sneakers, check us out on patreon.com/preachersandsneakers.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.